Yeah. Oh, there we go. All right. Thank you, my trusty sidekick. Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call our meeting to order. It is 5:12. Yes. And our meeting is officially in session. If everyone would please stand for the pledge, including you, son. Up for the pledge. Thank you. Hey, Miss M, what wonderful ethics thought do you have for us today?
You know, I didn't prepare one today. I'm very sad to say, but in preparing for my trip in 2 weeks to Greece, I've been thinking of how to simplify things for the people in Greece. And there's a great quote with Albert Einstein, and he said, "If you can't explain what you're doing to a 6-year-old, you don't understand it." And I thought that was really brilliant. And, you know, we have so many papers and things that we're always going through and the complexity of all of this and the laws. And if we can get the essence of what we're doing and the purpose of what we're doing and communicate it to a 6-year-old, maybe a 10-year-old, you know, I think then we're being more successful. So that's my thought.
Good. I like it. I like it a lot. Okay, so our minutes from the April 17th meeting, has everyone had a chance to review the ones from the SHAPE meeting?
I saw those. Did we get those?
Yeah.
No.
Got them? You want to just take a few minutes to look them over, and after you've done so, if I can get a motion to approve them?
To oppose the SHAPE meeting minutes for April 17th.
You're opposing them?
Did I say oppose?
Yes.
Move to adopt or approve.
I was going to say, you're going to change the game on me today. What's going on?
We're
going
to open this on a positive note. Motion to approve the proposed SHAPE meeting minutes of April 17th.
Thank you. Is there a second? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. And next, our regular Ethics Commission meeting minutes from April 17th. We've had a chance to review those. If I can get a motion to approve them as well. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Thank you. And all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. So thank you for that. We're moving into our new business, which is Ordinance 2017-346 regarding amending confirmation process for Ethics Commission appointees and proposed amendment to Ordinance 2017-346 by Ethics Commission member Joe Rogan. So maybe, yes, Ms. M.
I was just, if I could, I would just like to welcome my friend Mary Blandlove to the Ethics Commission. This is it's your first meeting, isn't it? Yes, and I just thought maybe before we get into it, if she could say a few things and just say hello to the group.
You beat me to the punch. That is absolutely fine. Yeah. Ms. Blandlove, welcome.
Thank you.
What would you like to share? Introduce yourself to us formally and say whatever's on your heart.
Well, I'm waiting, I think, for formal approval.
Yes.
And I'm happy to be here in the meantime and meet everyone, and I will work hard to remember everyone's names. I'm a lawyer with Marks Gray. I've been practicing almost 39 years doing general civil defense litigation, mostly medical malpractice defense.
Okay.
I moved to town in 78 from law school, and I picked Jacksonville as a hometown. I'm an Army daughter. No hometown before here.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to possibly working.
Thank you. We're so pleased to have you. And I'm going to extend the same opportunity to you, too, because we haven't formally met yet. So welcome, and same as Ms. Blandlove.
Thank you. I'm happy to be
here.
Sure.
Is this your first meeting, Michelle?
Yeah. My first in-person meeting, yes.
Oh, that's right. Yes, yeah.
No problem. I'm the third child in my family, so I'm used to waiting my turn. I am Michelle Barnett, and I'm an attorney. I have my own law firm. I practice labor and employment law, representing management. Born and raised in Lake City, and I've been here in Jacksonville 14 years. Married with three children. They're 7, 5, and 2. And so in addition to my full-time practice, I have a busy but exciting home life. So.
Yes. Oh, welcome. We're very happy to have you as well. Hey, you're welcome. Yes.
Can I ask a quick question just so I'm learning? We learned earlier that our book is public record and you keep it. Should we give back the shade minutes? Do you take them away?
Anything that is like that, that it was passed out to everybody, we keep track of it. And okay. So you can either keep it in your book or throw it out or whatever. You know that when you're getting that kind of like minutes or like agendas and things like that, we are keeping all of that here. It's when you make your own personal notes. Like if you wrote all over that, you know, then that's something that we don't keep track of. So you keep that.
Are shade minutes public record?
They are. Once we have voted on it, then it becomes public. If it's still in the process of being decided, then it's in the shade, and we gather them up after shade meetings. We don't even let people walk out of the room with them until they become public.
Thank you. Still learning.
No, it's fine. It's
better to ask than to assume.
Oh. Interruptions.
Or
Madam Chair.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Let's. Ms. Schmidt.
Hello. I'm Ellen Schmidt. I'm the next newest from you two ladies on the Ethics Commission. I'm a social worker. I'm the Director of Social Services at Baptist Health System. Very happy to be here. Still learning. Tons to learn. I have served on the Ethics Committee at Baptist for a really long time, but as we were talking about earlier, the business ethics and medical ethics have similarities, but there's a lot of differences as well. So I'm excited to be here and learning too. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Brian Aul. I'm an attorney at Colescott & Cassane. I do general civil litigation, insurance defense type work. I look forward to working with you.
Hey, and I am Ioana Allen, and I'm honored to serve as chair this year. I'm an entrepreneur. I run a consulting and strategy company called Thomas & James, and I work with nonprofit organizations and professional athletes who are interested in impacting lives and transforming our community. I'm a mom to an 8-year-old, and I'm very happy to have you with us.
I just meant for the recording, but Joseph Rogan. I'm the chief judge's appointee, and I'm a lawyer at Smith-Halsey & Busey.
I'm Dave Ryback. I'm with Johnson & Johnson, so I'm a compliance officer in industry. I am not a lawyer, and I've been on the commission for a year and a half, and welcome officially and hope to be official.
And I'll introduce two people who aren't here. Hi, I'm Dr. George Candler. And Dr. Candler is the head of the public administration program at UNF and has been a member for several years. He's in Brazil right now. Yeah, he actually publishes papers in Portuguese. And John Hartley is our other member to round out the group. And John used to head up the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office Anti-Terrorism Unit, and he's retired now.
All right. Carla doesn't need it. Okay, I'm Cherry Pollack. I'm the assigned attorney in OGC. I've been working. I just got my 10-year letter Friday in my 10-year pen from the mayor, Mayor Curry. Yeah.
How
excited.
How much more vacation time does that mean?
I think I get a dish. My annual leave goes up, I think. Something like, I don't know how much. I was 600 for 10 years. Yes, 10 years. So I think I get $600 additional dollars or something like that. But I do other stuff for the city as well. But I'm the assigned attorney and actually been a practicing attorney for 19 years. So I'm glad to work with everyone.
I'm Kirby Eberdorfer, and I'm the deputy director. I work very closely with Carla and Deborah in the ethics office. I formerly was a member and past chair of the Ethics Commission, which was one of the most rewarding professional activities I ever had, which led me to working here. So,
I'm Deborah Melvin, a recent retiree of Johnson & Johnson, and I got bored, and I'm happy to say that I was hired to work with Kirby and Carla here in the ethics office. I'm their executive assistant part-time.
All right. All introductions are done. Okay, so we're going to jump into the new business, and thinking we should probably start with maybe Joe kind of bringing everybody up to speed on why we're having this meeting, what it's all about. Are you okay with that?
Sure.
All right, great.
So this, whose appointment was before rules when this came up?
This was Leslie Jean-Barre. If you recall, Leslie was appointed.
It was Ms. Barnett's, right? Wasn't she up that day? The day, no?
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, right.
So the day that Ms. Barnett was before the Rules Committee for a recommendation whether the full council should approve her Ethics Commission appointment, Chair Dennis brought up an inconsistency in the code here, in the ordinance code, about how people are put onto commissions. In his view, and I think he's right, I don't have any reason to think he's wrong, the Ethics Commission is the only commission, or border commission, where an appointee serves until council takes action. For every other board and commission in the city, you don't get to sit on the board or vote until after you're confirmed by council. There's a long and very interesting history that Carla can explain, if you'd like, on why that is the case and the different compromises that led council to adopt the code, the ordinance that's in effect right now, which allows people to sit pending confirmation. A lot of it was to avoid the potential gamesmanship that can arise if a complaint is pending or if council is otherwise allowed to hold up an appointee and then affect the decisions that the Ethics Commission could make. My concern wasn't with any sitting members of the council, and especially not with Chairman Dennis or Council President Boyer. It's more to save temptation for future members. My issue is that if a complaint were filed, for example, against the council president, we are all bound by Florida statute, or it might actually be by the ordinance code, not to reveal that. So that has to be confidential. So the only people that know about that complaint are the council president, us, and Carla, and her staff. The council president could then hold up or allow to go forward an appointee to the commission based on how that would affect the vote on his or her complaint. Now, what's the odds that that would happen? Hopefully zero. But we don't want to leave that kind of decision with the morality of future officials, right? We want to control to the extent we can the oversight role that the commission provides. And, Carl, you may want to give the very brief version of sort of how we got to the ordinance that's in place right now, and then I can talk about the different amendment proposals.
Okay. There's various ways that Ethics Commission members get appointed across the country. The most independent way, Miami, Los Angeles, there's several cities. They actually have, like, the League of Women Voters or President of the University. Outside, external people appoint people to the Ethics Commission with no approval of their city council. You know, they just come in, and that's the person from the community. So that was what was proposed in 2011, that we have that independent form. So we're coming really directly from the citizens. After much discussion, the compromise was, okay, we're going to have elected officials appoint people, but it's, you know, they're going to come from, like, several different appointed officials. Instead of, like, in some communities, the mayor picks all 9 people on the Ethics Commission. That's not really a successful way of doing it. So the compromise was we would have 6 of you appointed by elected officials. You 6 pick 3. And that all of you get confirmed by city council. But that you serve immediately. When the chief judge or the public defender, the mayor, when they appoint you, bam, you become a member and you can come in and start voting. And so that was leaning towards the more independent model. And that worked fine for 20 years until this year. And we had 2 appointees. Maria Mark was the first one and Leslie Jean-Barre, who was the second one, they come in, they serve, they introduce themselves to everybody, just like Mary Bland did tonight. Hi, I'm here, I'm now a member. And then they find out, like, a month later, no, they're not going to be a member for various reasons. That's not good. You know, that's not good. On the other hand, we don't want the manipulation on the tail end, like we're going to hold this person up and never confirm them because there's an ethics case against me, and I want to manipulate the system. So I thought that Joe came up with an excellent compromise. If we have what we have now, which is like Mary Bland is actually now under the current law that we've got, the public defender appoints her, bam, you're on, you can vote tonight. That's what we have. What's proposed in this first bill that came out is, no, you don't get to serve until the city council gives you a final up or down. The problem with that is that could be delayed and that can be manipulated. And so I think that what Joe came up with was a really brilliant compromise in the middle here. And why don't you describe like what you your concept here? Because I think it's a good point to preserve our independence and at the same time protect against any manipulation that might occur in the future, and hopefully it never does. But I tell you, it has happened all over the country where appointments have been held up. You know, so it's not like it's out of the realm of possibilities that this could happen to our commission.
Sure. So. I don't know how brilliant it really was. My suggestion was that there be a waiting period so that council could have a period of time. I suggested 60 days. There's at least one member of the Rules Committee who said they would be more comfortable with 90 or 120. The period doesn't really matter. Just a waiting period that would allow somebody to sit on the commission if council doesn't take action in a certain amount of time. Basically, it would require the council president, if they wanted to prevent somebody from voting, to call them for a vote. That's what it would do. So my proposal would be 60 days. So you have an appointment, and 60 days later, they sit on the ethics commission, they could vote until they are confirmed or denied by council. Council could still deny them. So it doesn't require the council to take action within any period of time. It just says if you don't take action within 60 days, 90 days, 120 days, then that person will sit on the commission and vote until you take action. I thought that was a good middle ground. I've met with a few of the members of the Rules Committee in my personal capacity, and most of them expressed support for this. The worst I got, I think, was a lukewarm response. And so, but I didn't get any pushback on the date at all. I think it accomplishes both goals. I also saw the problem that came up this year, regardless of its infrequency, as Carla pointed out. I also saw the problem this year that came up and the need to prevent that, because I think it erodes the public trust when members of the Ethics Commission are caught in things that we could have caught on the front end. And so I think this compromise, the 60-day waiting period or 90-day waiting period, whatever you want to make it, is a good middle ground between the issue that Chairman Dennis pointed out and the issue that I'm raising.
And one of the reasons we're here tonight and we called the meeting is because the Council Rules Committee is going to be meeting on this, and they want to know what the position of the Ethics Commission is. They know what Joe's position is. They know what my position is. But they want to really hear from the entire Ethics Commission. Typically, we do that for the new people in a resolution form. And then that gets typed up, and the chair signs it. And we have a resolution. This is the position of the entire Ethics Commission.
And, Joe, the idea is if they are appointed, they could attend. They just would not be voting until after 60 days. Is that how that would work? Or they would not attend. They could attend because it's public.
Sure, yeah. Under my proposal, they would not be members of the commission until after 60 days. So they could attend just like any member of the public could attend. But they wouldn't sit up here with a nameplate. They wouldn't vote until after the 60 days or council approves. And obviously, like I said, 6 months later, council could deny them confirmation and they'd be pulled off. So it's not a requirement to act. It's just a time limit.
Sorry, and I'm jumping in. So how is that different from what we have now? Other than delaying and giving council a period of review time?
That is the only difference from what we have now, is that it gives them a period to review it before the appointee starts voting.
And Carla, has this year been an anomaly with people who have not ultimately been approved, or is this something that has repeatedly been an issue? I guess I'm wondering is a knee-jerk reaction to, you know, what's happening right now, or if in fact this has really ever been an issue.
It wasn't an issue for 20 years. So the oddity of having two of the appointees fall off for various reasons in a short period of time is very strange. It probably won't happen for another 20 years again. So the thing is, I don't think it's bad. Like, let's say that Mary Bland was appointed by the public defender, and you knew it, and so you came and you sat in the audience for two meetings. kind of getting a, and that she doesn't get to vote on any particular thing for 2 months. But then the 60 days, the council may be, for whatever reasons, dragging their feet after, and it could be for a bad reason, although I know our Jacksonville council would never do anything bad, but let's say that there's dragging of feet. After 60 days, you come sit in that seat and you start voting. And they could still, like 5 months from that point, say, no, we've decided we don't want her, we don't confirm you. But at least you can start voting and we can start having active members. Because throughout the country, we have ethics commissions that cannot vote, they cannot get quorums because the elected officials are not putting people onto the commission. So we can't have that scenario. So anyhow, it's just she sits in the audience for two meetings. That's the only difference.
So a follow-up question to that is, while Mary Bland, for example, is on the sidelines, is her predecessor still sitting here as a voting member, or is that just an open seat with nobody to fill?
Depends on how they left, right? Mm-hmm. So if the person before her resigned, they're gone. If their term just expired, then like any board, they serve until they're replaced.
But they may not show up, you know, like they may say, look, it's December 31st, we have calendar year terms, and they're gone, they left, and you say, listen, we're waiting for a couple months to see if Mary Bland's going to, can you just keep coming to meetings? And they might say, well, you know, I'm done. So we may not have anyone sitting there, but technically they could be kept on.
Yeah, the only, and I'm sure the days kind of vary. I would like to go shorter rather than longer, and I'm sure there's a 60 is probably the medium, but you know, for Mary and Michelle, we have subcommittees, and we typically serve on, you know, two subcommittees, and if there's two openings or more, that becomes even more of a challenge. So that's the only thing I would argue, to go 45 days, and I'm sure that that's going to be the challenge, you know, going to.
The reason the 60 days was picked initially is because if you file any bill, the typical time period by the time you have first hearing and second reading, it goes to rules and goes to the final, you know, it's going to be 6 weeks is the typical. So we just extended another 2 weeks and gave an extra cycle to get to the 60 days.
Most committees and the full council, well, most committees meet every 2 weeks. And so the 60 days was basically full bill cycle plus one deferral. So it gave them one, you know, because typically, or some of the members, I don't know if typically, some members don't look at bills until they come up for first reading, and that makes perfect sense. And so then an ECA or somebody points out that there's an issue with a candidate, it would allow one deferral and still for it to continue in its normal cycle.
So if we're inclined to act now and rework this bit of legislation, is there any reason why there's not an appetite to address the other potential mechanism of manipulation, which would be just to delay making any decision and then say, no, we don't think so, right before there's an important vote on an investigation for an official?
Well, that was the reason why we had the independence from that process to begin with, you know. I think it'll not be a problem. I say that just because everybody really operates in good faith. I think it would be really odd for that to happen, and I think the press would be all over it. So I don't see a threat of that. If I did, I would let you know.
That'd be the same issue under the current code, right?
Yeah. It's the only unresolved issue. I mean, yeah. We talked about the two different mechanisms of manipulation, and we're only addressing one. Mm-hmm. Not that necessarily there would be folks on who would make the voting decision.
Just to give you kind of, in my impression, and between Carla and I, we've met with every member of rules. And there is not an appetite for going further toward independence. So in my view, the Rules Committee at its next meeting will adopt an ordinance that something in some version of these amendments, and they're not going to go the other way. That's just, not that that should change, you know, what we recommend here today, but just so that's kind of in mind.
I have a question.
I think that answers the question that I posed.
Do you have anything else before I speak?
This is for Ms. M or maybe for Kirby. Are you aware of any other city who's had a similar situation? Either
ours?
Mm-hmm.
Well, right now, the Atlanta Ethics Commission their whole process of the independence of, like, the League of Women Voters sending someone, a president of a university, the Bar Association sending someone, has been declared unconstitutional by someone who was charged with an offense, filed a constitutional objection. And so right now their whole ethics commission is in disarray because of the pure independence of it. And so I think going to that extent is not the best model. It just isn't the best model. What we have, I think, is a good balance.
Mm-hmm.
And with this little adjustment here, I think it's a fair one to make. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it is going to hurt us to say, yes, we go along with what's being suggested here. We just need this little revision. And I think that that's a fair revision. So I think we don't have any ethics commission that I'm aware of in the United States that's in quite our position. They are usually lapdogs, mm-hmm. where they just basically, the mayor picks like all seven people and he picks all of his friends or her friends, and, you know, and they, you know, that model, very ineffective. Or you have the completely independent model like Atlanta and Miami, and Atlanta is like, now we're testing the constitutionality of that. So I think we're kind of in the middle right now, and it's good. And this bill, I think, is a good idea only if we have the revisions that Joe has suggested. If we don't have that safeguard, then I think it encroaches on the independence of the ethics commission. It's not good.
And then the second question, Joe, you said that in the discussions that you've had, you only got one lukewarm response. Was there like any reason why it was lukewarm, or?
My impression was, so Chairman Dennis is the one who proposed this change, and the change was actually introduced to council by the Rules Committee as a whole, which is relatively rare. Generally, the committees as a whole don't introduce something. Most of the members that I met with, and from talking with Carla that she met with, were very receptive of this change and thought, well, that's just sort of a no-brainer. I mean, I think the vast majority said, that's a no-brainer. All you're doing is saying that if we don't act within 60 days, then we can still act, is really the only change. The only pushback I got was by a member or maybe two who just said they didn't understand why this commission was any different than any other board. Why should the appointment authority for this board or commission be any different than literally every other board in the city of Jacksonville? And so I tried to explain why they are different. First, this is the only board or commission, to my knowledge, that has authority to fine city council members. That's a big one. Also, we're just very active. And so as Mr. Ibeck pointed out, and I pointed the same thing out, there's just a lot going on. And when I first joined the commission, which has only been 6 months ago or something, if this proposed amendment by the Rules Committee had been in place when I joined, the full commission would only have had five members. Mm-hmm. And that's one member from a quorum, right? So if one person is sick, you don't have a quorum, as I understand the quorum rules, Sherry.
Yeah, five people, and nine so, members, five people is
right.
a quorum.
So when yes. I came onto it, if one person was gone, you don't have a quorum, and you'd barely have a quorum for any of the committees, mm-hmm. right? Because unless every member was serving on every committee, you couldn't operate. So you'd just basically bring everything to a grinding halt. And where we are right now, the legislative committee is undertaken under Chairman All has undertaken a complete rewrite of the ethics code. The complaints committee by Mr. Hartley has undertaken a complete rewrite of the complaints procedures. The full commission has a lot going on, and we just don't have the room to not have our manpower.
Mm-hmm.
I might also indicate that there is one council person I talked to who said, don't change it at all. Keep the independence that you've got. So we've got maybe that extreme. But I think that the compromise is something that that's why the council, the Rules Committee, wanted to hear from the Ethics Commission on what, after discussion, you think is the best way to go. They'll consider that, and I think it'll work out. I think we'll work out a compromise on it.
My just sitting here and thinking about how year end went, right, with two people dropping out, it really makes important that we do our nominations early when we know there's going to be vacancies. I mean, that's the critical thing as we run up against those calendar year ends.
Well, Maria Mark was started, and we did the notices on that position in October of last year, interviews in November. We picked her in November. I mean, I don't, way before I mean, you're right. I mean, all of the elected officials that have appointments should do them earlier. We should be ready. So January 1st, bam, you got a new member and they're ready to serve and confirmed. We need to move it back even more. But really, I don't want to change a whole lot of rules based on a fluke. You know, I mean, that was really just an oddball thing that in 20 years, really, you know, so I don't want to get too crazy about changing things. But
I personally don't like the knee-jerk reaction of it, and I'm very new to this, and I'm really not – I feel like I don't have the depth of knowledge, but I will tell you that it hits me right off the bat as thinking, you know, what has happened, transpired over the last few months, been enough for the officials who have the appointment authority to maybe either do better vetting or, you know, kind of remedy the process on its own without a change to the – very fresh to the table.
No, I would agree that it would be best to say those were two odd situations. It's not likely to happen again. Let's just tighten up a little bit on the appointments, do them earlier or whatever, have criteria for elected officials to have before they appoint someone. I would prefer that. I don't think that that's going to happen. I think the Rules Committee is going to go ahead with this particular thing. So at this point, the best we could do is talk to them about this particular compromise. I would prefer that we just say, look, it's happened twice in a short period of time in 20 years. Let's just give it a little bit more time because what we've got is working. And that is the opinion of one of the council people. That is the opinion. And the rest, I think, you know, we'll have an interesting discussion at Rules. I think they want to support the commission. They just didn't like... I think the idea of someone getting attached to I'm an ethics commission member and then they're in front of Rules and it's like, no, you're not. You're not going to do it. That's not good for a person. I mean, we can't have that happen. So I don't think they like that idea, which I didn't either. So anyhow, we've got a compromise on the table and we could, I mean... also take the position of, no, we're happy with the way it is. Don't do anything. I mean, that's the other alternative.
You have an alternative, right? You could say, we think it's working fine the way it is, but to the extent it's going to be changed, it should be changed no farther than this.
Yeah, that's actually good. It's acknowledging that, yeah, this is a fluke, and it works well. It has worked well. We've got one of the best systems in the country, really, for balancing this. Keep it the way it is, but if you feel the need to do it, then here's a compromise. That's good.
And presented in a fashion that acknowledges that we have to recede from the independence of the commission, and we're acknowledging that, but if we can't prevent it, we're proposing an alternative.
Is there any further discussion from the body? If not, then I'd like to hear some public comment before we make a decision.
Anybody? I might have one thought, which is... there's a problem with the vetting process, or this was a big aberration? Because a third concept could be that we offer to the Rules Committee, to the Council, it's the Rules Committee, we offer to the Rules Committee that we'll take a look at our own processes. Maybe they could defer a decision for 6 months, and we could come back to them with, we've made this change. Or were these just two bizarre aberrations that we could never have predicted or done anything different?
We could not have predicted either one of these. I really think not.
I think the first one, which
maybe
is... maybe? Yeah, I think Ms. Marks was... And I mean, I wasn't on the commission when she went through nominating, but I was when we voted her through, and we should have caught that. I mean, and I think we need to take responsibility where we do that. I mean, Ms. Mark was our appointee, and we didn't catch stuff that had already been in the news. And so,
but we caught it. It's just that the nominating committee did not think it was sufficient to not nominate her.
Okay.
It was discussed, and they just said, you know.
I wasn't there for nominating, so maybe that's right. But, you know, I felt a personal responsibility. I can tell you when all of that came out and she ultimately resigned or withdrew her nomination, I felt a responsibility having voted as part of the full commission that I made the wrong decision. There was something I should have known that I didn't.
Well, I'll share with you, and Ms. M knows and Kirby knows, that day, and this is this, I think this was my first lesson in leadership, because I had this weird feeling in the pit of my stomach. I felt it as we were voting, and I didn't say anything. And I didn't know what it was, but I just went with it, and I did not express. But I thought that it could definitely be questioned. I didn't think it was enough to necessarily exclude her altogether, but I could easily see how someone on the outside might question, you know, how could you let this person who demonstrated this, you know, behavior that was really uncharacteristic of someone who would be in office take place. And so I vowed that even if it offends someone, if somebody gets mad, I'm just going to say it. And at least I'll just get it out. And it's out in the universe. And then whatever happens, I can deal with that. But I won't let that feeling hit me again and not respond to it. So I understand what you're saying. But I concur that it was more foreseeable in that instance as opposed to the second one. And I mean, quite frankly, I think we have to be really realistic about what we can control and what we can't. And the reality of it is there is only so much control that we have in this process. I think that the way that it is now, I like the fact that the public defender gets to make an informed decision about who he wants. I like the fact that our state attorney gets to do that. Like, I don't want to get into a situation where we're giving, you know, we're giving instructions to people in terms of, like, how that should happen. I think that that also contributes to our group being so diverse and so uniquely meshed. You know, I'm somebody who has no legal experience at all as an educator, and yet, you know, for whatever reason, the committee at the time felt that I had something to contribute. And so I think if we start to get into too many particulars, then we take away from the organic structure in terms of how we come together, which is what makes us great. I'm just gonna put it out there. It's what makes us great. So so I think we have to be really, I mean, that's a very fine line, and I don't want that to go away, is what I'm saying. So I know I just said a lot. Any other discussion from the commission before we hear from the public? Because I'm really interested in hearing public position on this. Can we do that now? Okay. Do we have anyone who'd like to come up for public comment? Welcome to do so. Just come on up to the...
Oh, that's fine. We know who you are. Yeah.
That right up. Good evening.
Good afternoon, and thanks for letting me speak a little bit on this. I'm sorry I didn't get dressed up a little bit better. I didn't realize I'd be here. My name's Al Ferrero, and I'm the city councilman for District 2.
Yes, sir.
I was listening a little bit about this, and I want to first let you know how important I think all of you are. The public trust is something that's been eroded, and it's really important. And I've spoke to some of you folks out here, and it bothers me a little bit of when I'm hearing you talk about what's happening here. I was the one who brought up the Maria Marks. And I don't want you to think there was any manipulation. I don't want you to think I was trying to drag feet. That was not my intent. And for new members here, I want to fill you in on why I did this. When I saw her name come through, this to me was the absolute wrong thing for ethics to come through. And I could have sat back and said nothing. I couldn't do that. This was a huge problem. And I wanted to bring it up because it is a problem. And I've had people stop me at coffee shops, at gas stations, things like that, and tell me how important it was that I did bring this up. I've had very, very few people who have said just the opposite. And I think that one of the reasons you had two of these, and I can't prove it, but it was almost like a retaliation because I spoke up about it. It's how I took it. I'm not saying that's what it was, but it seemed like that might have been it. I will always do what I think is right for our city, no matter who it is. And if I have to be the one guy who stands up and says I think something's wrong, I'll do it because I want our city to have the very best. And out of almost a million people, I don't think that we need to take somebody who 15 months earlier or 16 months was in the newspaper, going up to people's homes, trying to open up the doors, having the police out there pulling. There was a lot of things that went through my mind before I brought this up. This was not a spur of the moment. This was not something that I was trying to hold anything up or drag anything out. I think it's important for you to hear from me because I was the one who had that meeting, and I want you to understand how I thought about it. I think with everything that's happened in our city and what you see happen in our nations, that it is very important, the role that you play, an extremely important part. And I've told Ms. Miller this. I take the ethics extremely serious because you are our line, okay? And city council is a line, and the mayor's office is a line. There's a whole bunch of lines, and we've got to do what's best for the city. But I thought it was important when I saw this coming up today that I at least come up here and explain to you how this came up. This was not an anomaly. This was not something that was just popped in there. I looked at it. I saw it as a problem, and that's why I spoke up about it. So I wanted to at least get that off my chest. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Faro. I appreciate you coming, being here with us tonight. Anyone else? Mr. Markle, you up next?
This is open public comment, right?
Yes, sir.
Because last time I got from Mr. All was, I think it was last time, Mr. All was running a meeting, and he held some public comments that I didn't understand, which we've never had before, which was very nice, but I ended up speaking on something that was off topic because I didn't realize what he was asking for. It was a limited public comment he was calling for, and I didn't understand that part.
No worries.
This is something new we're doing, so or y'all, yeah, and I appreciate it.
Okay.
My name is Conrad Markle. I represent the Concerned Taxpayers of Duval County. My business address is 1146 Romney Street. I have property in several different city council districts around Duval County, being raised in this county. Anyway, I what I wanted to speak to was the thing that was on the front page of Saturday's paper, this eruption about the missing money from the tree, the penalties and so on that have been collected since 1999 for the removal of the protected trees from properties that are being developed. And the reason I wanted to speak on it was 2 years ago, last month, I went to a meeting at UNF where there were a whole bunch of people that were involved with everything from landscape architects to foresters and botanists to ICSIA, the Native Plant Society, Sierra Club. And they had, the people that were running the meeting was the, if I can get this straight, the Public Trust Florida Environmental Trust Institute, which has an interesting connection to this body because when I came here first in September of 2009, there was a lady who was here for a couple of meetings before she was replaced by the new state attorney, who was Angela Corey. Pat Shearer was a female attorney who had been the former appointee for the state attorney who was going out, who was a Democrat, so she was forced out because of for political reasons. But it's not being forced out. It's been explained to me that it is the normal procedure. Anyway, she has been the chair of this Environmental Legal Trust. That's where she was 2 years ago. I don't see her name turning up in this thing now. There's a Mr. November who is now the face of it. Andrew Miller was the face of it. In 2 years, I haven't been able to get anything out of anybody about where this stuff was supposed to go because 2 years ago, they had gone to Tom Goldsberry, who had just been reinstated as the head of the building department, and asked where the fiduciary trust was with all this money that has been accruing since 1999. And he informed them that he didn't even have any idea that he was supposed to be responsible for it. He wasn't sure it was under his domain, which it was. But he had just been moved back over there after a seven-year hiatus, thanks to Mayor Payton. But he had been reinstated. But anyway, this thing came out the other day. The city council has now got a lawsuit that has been levied by that the environmental trust people, as I have not been able to find anything about. John Crescent Benny was heavily involved in the writing of the tree amendment in 1999. I've asked him, I don't know how many times, what he knew about any of this, and all you get is I don't know, which is what I usually get out of most of the council people that I try to confer with. But John is very conscientious, and the upshot of this, I'm going to make it quick. The upshot of it is that now, after 2 years of silence and this lawsuit being levied that the city council is considering, they've decided that there's at least $6 million that nobody knows where it is. And the way the article in the Times Union is couched, and I don't know, you know, I mean, maybe it's fake news, I don't think so, is that they're predicting that there probably won't be any culpability, that the administration probably won't hold anybody accountable for the missing $6 million. They're just going to try to add some new bureaucracy who could properly administrate the funds that they do have, which is another $7 or $8 million, I believe it is. 2 years ago, they thought they had $2 million, so it's really been all over the board. But it's not small change for the attitude that we get out of the people who are entrusted with the public trust. And I was on the JCCI study in 2008, 9, 10 on the city governance, pension funds, and the last leg was the public trust, which is what brought the Ethics Commission out. And, you know, the reinstatement of, after 37 years of the new ethics code, this commission with power, with the new ordinances, the sustaining the true commission, and the suggestion that the third leg should be the inspector general, who at that time was removed at the same time we made these recommendations. But this group survived, and now we have the new inspector general. And what I'm looking forward to is he's the new one who supposedly will have the proper metal in his spine and the correct intent to be able to cut through the good old boy system in this town, is taking office on June the 17th, and I have great hopes for what he's going to be able to unearth after he takes office. He is very impressive when you listen to him and talk to him. And he emphasizes that his number one goal is to bolster the public trust, which has been in tatters. The chair of that study in 2009 in the press release said that the public trust in this town was just about completely destroyed at that time. So we've been gradually rebuilding by bits. We get up a little bit, and then it degrades again. Right now I have a real problem with what they're doing with the entire COJ website, with all the disappearing information under Mr. Curry's administration. And I don't know why. There used to be a lot of really good information in there about what you guys do, about the True Commission, et cetera, all the different bodies. And you can hardly find anything in there now. The Ethics Commission website has probably got more of what's really required than any of the other ones are bothering to do at this point. I was just really disappointed with what I was able to find next to what used to be there about who was on the True Commission, because it's not there. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Markle. Mr. Nooney? You want to come up to the mic so we can make sure we capture what you're saying? Thank you.
All right, just a point of order. Believe me, these 3 minutes go fast, and I just don't want to. I'm just curious, on the agenda, are we still under this new business? Are you still, didn't take any vote or anything?
Well, I don't want to take formal action on that until we've had an opportunity to hear from the public in terms of position on that.
Okay, so if I speak to 346, I won't lose my 3 minutes for number four on the agenda, which is public comment.
Correct.
Okay.
This is your opportunity to say whatever it is that you have to say.
Right, on number three.
He's asking for an opportunity to speak on public comment for this actual item on 346, and then he wants to speak again under the public comment section.
Right, with a
different topic. And that will
topic.
Not be related, though, to 346. You just
correct.
Want it.
Correct. Okay. I just want clarification. Okay. All right. I just, you know,
and
you've
he should
got...
be allowed to do that.
Right. That's what I said, right? Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought you
okay.
did.
Yeah. All
okay.
right. Well,
you're
I
good.
Just wanted to... Just double check.
Okay.
But anyway,
no worries.
As far as boards, commissions, and things like that, you know, I just wanted to share with you an experience, you know, where, you know, an observation, you know, during a rules, the agenda meetings, you know, where appointments come up, you know, sometimes what I had witnessed was even during the agenda meetings that, you know, they can kind of knock somebody out, you know, of the process up there. Which I thought was like, wow, you know, during agenda. And so, anyway, you know, I just wanted to bring that little observation, you know, to the commission. So even though you're trying to create a process, there seems to be other areas through the process before it gets to an ultimate vote that can also, you know, take somebody out of consideration. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Nooney. So with regard to 2017-346, what say we as the commission in terms of what we're going to propose? Are we going to propose anything? We've heard several different opinions in terms of how that looks. And thank you for everything that you've done with regard to attending the meetings and having the conversations along with Ms. M. I think that's really important. So what is our recommendation going to be?
So I liked what I think Joe said earlier. Was it you when you were talking about amending your recommendation to reflect that we think that the process that we have is solid and would hope that that could remain, but if that cannot, then this is our proposal as a compromise? What do you all think?
So Carla just passed me some language that I think reflects that thought, which says the Ethics Commission supports current law on the process for selection of Ethics Commission members, citing the law, in that it preserves the independence of the commission, a body that has jurisdiction to hear complaints against public officials and employees in the city of Jacksonville. In the event that the city council is persuaded to proceed with 2017-346, the Ethics Commission respectfully requests that the change go no farther than basically what I proposed. So that was her thought, I think, trying to capture what we were discussing.
Can I ask a question? Mr. Ferraro, do you mind if I ask you a question while you're here? I'm just curious, because you're here, you're the best source. what is your knowledge in terms of, like, when these things can possibly be held up for whatever reason? Have you experienced that or know any factors that could contribute to it, maybe going beyond the 60-day period? Does that make sense?
I don't have enough experience to really let you know on that.
Okay.
It's just that I guess the thing that I was trying to really push is how important I think what you're doing is.
Right.
I like to see that being independent.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that bothered me that I was hearing Ms. Miller say is that that this was sort of just something that, and I may say it the wrong way, that it was just kind of an accident or something that came out there. And what I was trying to say is this was no accident. This was me reading through and grabbing this and trying to bring it out in front of everybody.
Okay.
So to me, the system worked.
The way that it's structured now.
The way it's structured, I thought it worked. That's why I ended up having that notice meeting with Garrett Dennis, and then I was going to see where I needed to go from there.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it worked. What you're asking about with, having so many days go by, sometimes it depends on what time of the year it is when we start going through budgeting and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you that we don't get to read as much because we get books that look like phone books of trying to read through, what our money's going through the city. So it's hard for me to say, but I wanted to let you know the way the system was set up, it worked, I thought.
Okay, that's what I needed to hear. Okay, thank you.
And Madam Chair, if I could just say something.
Yes, ma'am.
When I indicated that it was a fluke in 20 years, it's just that we've never had anybody, that was controversial. That's the only fluke that I was talking about. I wasn't saying that the process didn't work. I thought it did work. And I think that anybody who's appointed to the Ethics Commission, their name comes up in the City Council paperwork. And if there's an objection in the community, it should come up in that process, as it did come up in this process. So the system did work in this particular scenario. We found out that there was objections to the Ethics Commission appointment. All I was trying to say is that's the first time it happened in 20 years. It just is.
Okay.
But it worked.
Okay.
So I think if we did nothing, it would continue to work like it has, like it did.
Okay. Thank you, and thank you. Further discussion?
I like the draft that Joe read. You know, I think if we don't offer something, it doesn't show like we're listening. But I think if we could keep it maintained as is, and there's enough support to say that the system did work and that, you know, the vetting did capture concern of the community, then that makes sense. So that stronger statement, we'd like it to stay as is for the independents. And, you know, I mean, the workload is pretty huge, and maybe there is a tweak there that the importance of, because our committee subcommittees will come to a halt if we don't, you know, maintain our full, you know, membership. Mm-hmm. So that would be my only recommendation, if you want to consider that.
Because my position has been pretty public on this, so I don't want to offer a motion on behalf of the commission. I'd rather support what the body wants to do. But if that's the route that the whole commission wants to go, I'm happy to kind of draft the language with Carla, which would be very similar to what I just read.
Brian, do you have anything to add?
I'm satisfied with the current draft.
Okay. Ms. Schmidt?
I like the draft. I'm having a thought about the work that the Internal Operations Committee is doing around the potential possible change in a procedure that I think you might not be able to get there fast enough, because when is the Rules Committee meeting? Tuesday? Tuesday at 1 o'clock. Only because we're looking to potentially strengthen our own internal procedures so that if something happened in the future and a person had been confirmed and then had some kind of misstep like happened with these other two candidates, we'll have our own process for moving that person out of the commission.
I think we have the ability, if an elected official puts someone on, to do anything in our internal operating rules. The elected official will put someone on. It goes to the council to make that decision. I don't know what we could do.
Could we just research them? And maybe it's the standard, you know what I mean? Like, maybe it's exactly what we talked about during, when did this come up? It was during the time that I sat on the committee for the new inspector general. And that was one of the things that was a very hearty part of our discussion, because we had so many candidates, many of them were highly qualified, but we were really interested in knowing so that we didn't find ourselves in another sticky situation with needing another IG in 2 years or what have you. We were really not necessarily firm, but we had really high expectations of what happened on the HR front. In terms of what that research looked like. So maybe that's an opportunity for growth for us in terms of just making sure that due diligence has been done in terms of really, truly, you know, and not to say that an elected official wouldn't do that, because I don't want to sound as if I'm being disrespectful, but maybe that's where, you know, the bulk of the energy, if you will, is kind of placed to make sure that they are. Is that what you mean? Is that what you were alluding to? Or?
See, I think we could have something in our internal operating procedures as to what the commission does on our process for picking our three people. Mm-hmm. I just don't think we could say how elected officials do what they
right.
do.
I hear you. That makes sense to me.
I think what Ms. Schmidt was talking about is the ability of the commission, or could the commission, which he's asking, remove its own members.
Gotcha.
Now, as a general, I don't know, Sherry, you probably know.
The members that we appoint, but all the other members, like those who are appointed by state attorney, public defender, the sheriff's office, we would not have any input in those appointments.
How would that?
Could we take them off? Like if someone's confirmed?
Oh, no. Once they're confirmed by city council, we definitely would not have any input in that.
And why? So as a general matter of order, and then also under federal constitutional law, the body does have the ability, right? The United States Congress can remove its own members. A lot of people don't know that. So, like, you can run for U.S. Congress as a convicted felon, and the U.S. Congress can immediately remove you from that office. And that's true under Robert's rules, too. Okay.
And one of the things that was mentioned at the Rules Committee by Chairman Dennis was what would happen if there was some type of circumstance where it happened with a nominee that had been confirmed by council, and it was not with respect to an ethics commission appointee. It was a different board and commission that this question he raised, but he raised it to general counsel. Does city council have the ability to effectively remove somebody that they have confirmed? And the answer by general counsel was no. Once they confirm somebody, that is it.
So I think I got myself confused in the sense that when we last met with the internal operating committee, we were talking about the only way a person could be removed from the commission, from what I read in the procedures, was attendance violations. If you didn't attend adequately, then you could no longer serve. And we talked about creating opportunity for censure, if you will, of a person who maybe, you know, what if I did something unethical or inappropriate and it was big news and you've already confirmed me and here I am, but now you're stuck with me because I'm terrible, but I'm a good attender. But I guess if I think it through, we didn't actually say the person, we had the power to remove them. It was just to censure them. They wouldn't actually get removed. That is interesting.
Sort of
okay, so now I've learned.
To resign.
Yes, I got it now. Thank you. I don't think I fully understood that we couldn't choose to
get rid of them.
Get rid of our own person if the person wasn't meeting the expectations. But public pressure might be the way to go. Okay, I got it now. I'm caught up. Thank you for indulging me in understanding.
So can we hear the language again, please?
The Ethics Commission supports current law on process for selection of Ethics Commission members, Section 602.912. Is that a comma? Oh, sorry. Ethics Commission members, 602.912, in that it preserves the independence of the Ethics Commission, a body that has jurisdiction to hear complaints against public officials and employees in the city of Jacksonville. In the event the city council wants to proceed with 2017-346, we respectfully request that they go no farther than the proposal that we would attach to it, which would be mine.
Okay. And Ms. M, in light of the discussion that we've had about possibly vetting our people more in terms of our own recommendations, do you think that that is language that we need to add, like, you know, in light of recent events, you know, our commitment is to, or do you think we just don't need to do anything with it?
I think the internal operating group needs to take a look at that. I can tell you that since I was at the meeting with the nominating committee, it was discussed. So if we put in, you should discuss and vet, it was discussed and vetted, and you had three members of your commission that thought, even though it was discussed and vetted, it was not an impediment to her being on the commission. What they thought. So I don't know what you can put in a rule about that.
That would make it
That's
different.
What they thought. You know, but I think we should follow up and maybe discuss it more in the next internal operating. Is there anything that we can do here to give guidance to future ethics commissions when they go through that process? Because I believe we might be doing, are we doing it again? Oh, okay, yeah. So we should address it, but I don't think we need to have it in this
part of this. Okay, so one more time, Joe. Just
what about including what Mr. Ryback was talking about? Just generally the scope of work that we have here, the fact that this would bring our committees to a halt.
I mean, I think that that's important because if we are in a situation and there is something pressing, it could really look bad. I mean, it could look very bad that we're at a standstill and this is the reason why, which is part of the reason I was interested in hearing from Councilman Ferraro with regard to what are some of the factors, because I want to make sure that we're being cognizant of that. You know, we're not members of city council, and I know that they have so much on their plates in terms of their service, but I just wanted to make sure that we're being understanding, you know, of what that workload looks like and the fact that it can be much heavier at certain times of the year than others. I think that that's a reality, and that's not something that we would be able to. So I actually like including that component. I think that that's wise. So how could we phrase that and fit it into this packaging?
After you have the sentence where you talk about, we want to stick with current law because It supports the independence of the commission. You can insert a sentence there before you put in, and in the case you want to go ahead with the bill. So just insert a sentence in there that says the Ethics Commission has 9 members and an extremely heavy workload, and we don't want to be impeded in the progress of the work of the Ethics Commission.
Every workload, including 4 subcommittees or something?
Right, right. Because someone should be able to come on and vote after a 60-day period of time. The city council could still be discussing and thinking about it, and like 4 months later, they could still turn the person down. But at least we've got the working, the work of the person during that dependency of that time. So just insert the sentence before the last one on in the event you want to go forward with the bill.
And do we have the words preserve and protect in there? Because we've used those quite a bit tonight. I like them.
All right. So what about this? The Ethics Commission supports current law and process for selection of Ethics Commission members, 602.912, in that it preserves and protects the independence of the Ethics Commission, a body that has jurisdiction to hear complaints against public officials and employees in the city of Jacksonville. The Ethics Commission has 9 members in an extremely heavy workload with 4 subcommittees on very different and sometimes time-sensitive activities. Mm-hmm. In the next paragraph, in the event the City Council wants to proceed with 2017-346, we respectfully request that the amendment go no farther than the attached proposal.
Mm-hmm. And what was the line about public trust again?
It preserves and protects the independence of the Ethics Commission. Is that what you're talking
about? I think that something needs to be said about public trust in the statement. I think that's important.
After you talk about the workload, put that a delay in processing our workload will decrease public trust.
Or could impact our ability to,
do our work, therefore impacting public trust.
Yeah, I think that's important.
Delay in Ethics Commission appointments.
Let the minutes capture that.
What happened? What'd you say?
A road versus negatively impact.
Road?
Yeah, the road is what my attorney colleagues like, so I'm going with them.
Delay in Ethics Commission appointments could impede our ability
to protect.
So is that your preserve and protect? To preserve and protect public trust?
I think one word needs to I know I'm getting technical, but I feel like one of those words needs to speak to public trust and the other needs to speak to the independence component.
All right.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Preserve would be
I think exactly trust. And to protect public trust, yeah.
Sometimes we have almost where we want to be and we then defer to the chair or
you agree with that, Mr. Nooney, Mr. Markle? Do you agree with that? Yes? Okay.
I think I got it.
All right, let's hear it again one more time.
The Ethics Commission supports current law on the process for selection of Ethics Commission members, 602.912, in that it preserves the independence of the Ethics Commission, a body that has jurisdiction to hear complaints against public officials and employees in the city of Jacksonville. The Ethics Commission has 9 members in an extremely heavy workload with 4 subcommittees on very different and sometimes time-sensitive activities. Delay in Ethics Commission appointments could impede our ability to protect the public trust. The next paragraph. In the event the City Council wants to proceed with 2017-346, respectfully request that the amendment go no farther than the attached proposal.
So the only thing, I don't think we need the in front of public trust. I think just protect public trust is good, and we can strike that the. That's the former English teacher coming out.
Got it.
And then we're good. Okay, so, oh, yes.
As a former English teacher, you may be able to teach me.
You have further and farther.
I know, but further is not an implication of actual distance.
Right.
It's an implication of time difference.
Correct.
So that's why I was suggesting further.
Gotcha.
It's definitely further. Yeah.
Not FU.
F-U-R, definitely. F-U. Heard, yeah. If I said farther, I was
everybody's shouting
F-U. Okay.
F-U-R.
That's T-H-E-R.
Better. That's better. F-U-R.
Not F-A-R. I mean, F-A-R.
So. Yes, ma'am. F-U-R. Very F-U-R. We got to put the R in there. We don't want to be on the front page of the Florida Times Union.
Councilor Ferraro okay. is just thanking God yes. right now that this doesn't happen in the city council.
Okay, so do we have a motion? So do we have a motion?
We have a motion to adopt the drafted language.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? All right, so we're good with that. And Ms. M, you'll handle...
I'll make
next
it magically look official. And we'll take it to the Rules Committee and we'll discuss it with the Rules Committee.
Okay. And that meeting is next Wednesday?
Tuesday.
At
1 o'clock. At
1 p.m.
City Council Chambers.
Chambers. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Ferraro.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So am I to understand that I need to do public comment again?
Yes. Yes, you can do.
Right. Okay.
The regular public comment.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So we're now going to have regular public comment. If there's anyone who would like to speak. Mr. Noon, are you coming? All right.
Are you setting a 3-minute rule?
Okay.
Yes. Is anyone monitoring that?
Yes, I am.
Oh, I'm sure you're monitoring it.
All right.
All right. My name is John Nooney, 8356 Bascom Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32216. Yeah, you know, as far as the public trust, you know, even though this is the Ethics Commission, I still tell people, I still think we're getting crushed. You know, it just, there are just some things that, you know, just, we just need to get better at. Let me just share something. You know, Mr. Markle alluded to, it was the Times Union story, it was Christopher Hong, you know, that had to do with the Tree Trust Fund, a trust fund, you know, with taxpayer dollars in there. $6 million just mysteriously, you know, it's like bye-bye. And so now there's going to be a settlement agreement. You got 3 Duval County residents, you know, and who are they? Because, you know, they should be national heroes, you know, and they should be getting the big tree hugger award, you know, in recognition. But what I want to say is that, you know, when you talk about boards and commissions and appointments, you know, we have a new IG. Inspector General, and that legislation was 2017-316, James Hoffman. He starts almost, you know, like next week, you know, and the first one should be this tree trust fund, $6 million mysteriously gone. And so, anyway, with Mr. Ferraro, and let me just read this to you, because right after I just went out, and after Mr. Markle made the comments about that, I mean, this is a big story. And I asked, you know, Al, did you hear about that? And they were, he's like, can't comment, John. Don't even talk to me about it. But you're going to be voting on this. So here's my question. And am I allowed to contact individual council members and ask them to have the new IG, James Hoffman, investigate the $6 million tree fund trust money shortfall?
You're posing that question to us?
Well, yes. I mean, you're the Ethics Commission. Or should I just go right to the IG? Or should I go to the, I mean, am I allowed to contact my council member? Al, you know, and his secretary just, no, you're not allowed to say anything to us. And I'm like, really? So this just happened. And so, you know, yeah, I'd love some guidance. You know, I know Carla just stepped out, but, you know, I mean, what's the deal? You know, here I have, we had a, you know, there's 19, you know, our representatives, and I was just told, don't say a word. Don't, can't do anything. So should we get Mr. Hoffman?
There's an attorney in OGC who's oh, that's time.
I didn't want to speak during your 3 minutes because it would have taken your time. So, okay.
But there's an attorney in OGC who's actually handling that lawsuit, the settlement litigation. What I could do is reach out to him and ask him whether or not it's okay for you. But I would think at first glance, since it is a settlement, they may be going into the shade meeting. So I'll reach out to the attorney who's working on that.
But if nothing else, he still should be able to send maybe an electronic communication or some type of letter expressing his concern as a citizen. He should be able to do that, right? Like, he's not restricted from being able to write a letter to his council person saying, I'm concerned about
filed,
this.
And it has been filed. It's a bill, but I don't want to give that advice yet.
Okay. So I'll say is, as a citizen, you have a right to be able to send whatever it is that you feel is a concern to you in our community, to your council person. Now, how they're going to respond to that, I think and he may not have been willing to have that discussion because of the fact that it is something legal. Maybe it was a sunshine issue, I would imagine. But if you were to send an email to your council member saying, this is who I am, this is what I read, I'm very concerned about this, and I urge you to have the new inspector general look into this, you're well within your right to do that. You're able to do that. I don't think I'm misspeaking in terms of you can communicate with your city council members and let them know what your concern is. And when Mr. Hoffman comes in, you can submit something to him. I suggest it all be in writing. I don't suggest you try to have because what you attempt to do in a conversation like that, you know, but public record is what you would submit electronically. So I think that would be fine. And you're well within your right as a citizen to do that.
All right. And who's the attorney in OGC that's overseeing it?
Jason Teal is handling that litigation.
Okay, and so then,
I'll get with him.
But the legislation has not yet been filed, correct? In other words, there's no bill number.
I think there is.
There is.
Yes, I think there
Madam
is.
Madam Chair, if I could suggest that the Ethics Commission only has jurisdiction over city officials and employees, right? Mm-hmm. So Mr. Nooney, as far as I know, is not a city official or employee.
Right.
So we have no jurisdiction over him.
Right, he's a citizen.
He can
do
whatever he can do, and the city council member may have other restrictions that we don't know about.
Right.
And that's about as far as I think I'd want to go on it.
Absolutely.
But again, the Ethics Commission, you should be, I think, concerned about some of this, because if you're looking at a legislative cycle, if there is a bill number, okay.
Okay, time is up. Thank you, Mr. Nooney.
All right, well, thanks for listening.
You're welcome. All right, any additional public comment? Okay. All right. So, date and time for our next meeting.
You have previously selected August 21st as
I'm
your next
still
meeting.
Still very much in favor of that being the case.
August 21st. Monday. It should be a Monday. Yes. Yes. Monday, August 21st at 5 p.m.
Are we good? All right. Anything else? All right. And we are adjourned at 6:30? Yes. Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Nice to meet all of you. Thank
oh,
you
so too.
Joe, thank you for all your leadership on this.
Thanks.
I know it's been a lot of
Such
meetings.
A good sidekick to the right and left. I love it. Hey, Kaden, you want to come take a picture with mommy? This will probably be the only meeting you ever
Come
here.
Kirby. Although you did.